Big ol' Marcus.
Oh, dude.
Big ol' Marcus.
Right here, right here.
Welcome back to the Native Ways Podcast. I'm your host, Richard Ellis.
I'm your co-host, Christian Miller.
And today we're joined by someone that I look up to extremely as an artist myself. Someone that in the artifact community needs no introduction. She's new to Texas, but she's not new to the artifact community by any means. She's not from Texas, that being said, but quite a few of you Texas collectors will know her, know of her work. She just kind of came to the Texas scene recently, and we're going to talk a little more about that. But no introduction needed, but I'm going to let Christian introduce her anyway.
Yeah, before we get started, like I said before on the earlier podcast, if you just want to like, comment, subscribe, if you're watching on YouTube now, we also have the TikTok up still. We're getting some engagement on that. And then also, we need to look at our Facebook page, Native Ways Podcast. So all of that, if you just want to go ahead and support us, join the community, we can all, you know, talk about stuff like this all the time and hunt and fish and all that good stuff. So we appreciate the engagement we've had so far. But I guess, Ren, if you want to go ahead and introduce yourself and give everybody a rundown of what you do and stuff like that.
Yeah. Hi, thank you for having me. And I made my way down to the Temple, Texas show today. Oh my goodness. this year I got invited to go by the show host, Leslie, and I was terrified to make that 11-hour drive. I'd never driven that far in my life by myself. And Leslie, and then I started getting to know more Texas collectors, and everyone was like so welcoming. I started looking at Texas artifacts and I was like, you've got to be kidding me. Like, they're just out of this world.
Right.
And so I'm like, oh, I just got to suck it up. I just got to suck it up. And I think I worried for an entire month, but I really felt so great at that show. It was wonderful. And I am grateful for you guys for having me today. And my real name is Karen.
Yes.
But I didn't like Karen before everyone else doesn't like Karen now.
Right.
So, I mean, I hear dudes being called Karen.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay. So anyways, I go by Ren. When I sign my artwork, I've had the same signature since grade 7. And it says Karen Harvey. So that is my real legal name, but I go by Ren. And I'm here in Nashville. I'm getting ready to move a little north of Nashville just to get out of this big city. But I've been in Tennessee for quite a while. And we have some pretty incredible artifacts too, which I'm sure you're aware of.
Yes.
Tennessee, Kentucky, stuff is sick. Mm-hmm. I've been doing serious archaeological art, I would say, from 2019 is when I started doing art again.
So pretty recently you got into the archaeology type artistry.
If anyone wants to like understand my story even further, you can search Ren Harvey, R-E-N Harvey, on YouTube. And Tennessee Crossroads, they're a TV station, and they did a YouTube special on me and this book I was illustrating. And if you watch that, you'll realize I've had a pretty strange path to get back to where I am today, because I ran for the University of Michigan on a scholarship, and I was recruited out of Paris, Ontario.
Okay.
So I was Canadian. And I can get to that, but I'm not Canadian anymore. I'm an American citizen. But I went to the University of Michigan, and what was great is I was already finding arrowheads and loving archaeology in Ontario in high school. I was actually the first high school student in Ontario's history to gain a license from the government. In Ontario, you can't pick up an arrowhead on your property. It doesn't matter if you've owned it for hundreds of years, that property. It is against the law to collect artifacts. I know. And this was back when I was in the 90s. And it's still so. I had an archaeologist who worked at Western University, And he was mentoring me because I contacted him. I wrote him a letter because no email back then. And he said, well, I can't work with you and you can't come learn how to do surface collecting and making maps until you get a license. And I was like, what? I have to have a, I didn't know. I'd already picked up some arrowheads. So, but yeah, I got an archaeology license in high school. I did 2 full-year reports, and those were sent to the Royal Ontario Museum. They are still there. I still get requests for people to look at them, which is just incredible because this is like 1991. Wow. Okay. So, I knew I loved archaeology, but I was also a runner and I had done a lot of art. I was a good artist in high school, but I have no degree in art. My degree is in archaeology. Okay. And that's what I got from Michigan, which is considered at that time was tied with Harvard as far as the best school in the country for anthropology, archaeology.
Okay.
Wow. Yeah, so to get that combined was amazing. I mean, they paid for my schooling. They paid for my 5th year.
Wow.
Michigan did. Gave me an additional scholarship. Yeah, I was very lucky.
So you got a track scholarship to Michigan and then pursued your love for artifacts through archaeology there. Got a degree in that?
Yeah.
So is that...
Here's the thing. They don't support each other, right? Because when you're running 60, 70 miles a week, you can't be out digging and excavating and, surveying. So what happened is I realized in college, wait a minute, can I combine art and archaeology? And I started seeing, I went to the library because no internet, and I saw a book on lithic illustrating. And I was like, oh yeah, I want to draw arrowheads. This is perfect. So I still ran for Michigan and finished my eligibility. I got a job with McGraw-Hill Publishing in college.
Okay.
Let me get a drink here. And so in college, not only did I have a scholarship, I was getting paid to draw for McGraw-Hill Publishing, and I was drawing bones of Neanderthals and skulls, and I did some crazy things. Wow. So I got into forensic anthropology, and back then, once there's no Photoshop, they needed me to illustrate and to accentuate things about tools and bones that they couldn't do.
Yes.
On a photograph.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah, it was fun.
That is cool.
It was a lot of fun.
I didn't realize, aside from briefly talking at Temple and talking over Facebook, I don't know much about your history other than just what I've seen through your illustrations. So it's cool to hear, kind of what got you going into this. And then, So after college, what did you do exactly? Like, where did you go from there?
Well, that's where it gets where it just gets nuts. When I was graduating from Michigan, I got an offer from a museum in Egypt to come spend a year there to draw artifacts. And I was like, at that time, it wasn't a good thing to be a woman and be in Egypt. I was like, I don't think I can go for a 5-mile run. That might not be. So I turned it down and I had to make a hard decision. I decided to be a professional runner.
Okay.
And I ran for Adidas and I ran for Canada. I ran at the world level. I did not make the Olympics, but I ran at the world level, competed very hard. And my running kind of took over my life for quite a while. And I didn't care about rocks all of a sudden because I'm running 70, 80, 90 miles a week.
Oh, wow.
And you're traveling and, your head, you're running twice a day, you're lifting weights. There's no time for anything.
So you're running
and
mainly
cross
country. And
so I did that for a while. My events were like the mile, the 5K, something like that.
Oh, okay.
Like We had the 3000 back then, but y'all don't have that anymore. So, but yeah, so, and I actually got into the steeplechase. I had the Canadian record for the steeplechase and was one of the pioneers for women to do the steeplechase. And eventually I started helping coach at Michigan.
Okay.
And I said, I'm going to give back, you know, and I loved coaching and I loved recruiting. I helped sign Michigan some stars. The head coach saw that I was good at it. He's like, here you go. And so I did that for a year. I would run with the girls. I paced the girls, loved it. And part of me went, why don't I could be a coach. Why don't I just become a coach? So here I go again. Now I'm going to do something else. And I was heavily recruited to become a coach because I was female and track and field, cross country is a very male dominated coaching world right now. Mm-hmm. And it was back then. So I ended up, after turning down several offers, I coached at the University of Illinois. And what's funny is the University of Illinois has some of the best archaeology in the country too, Cahokia.
Yes, ma'am.
But of course, I didn't know that back then. I didn't even know what Cahokia was. I'm in the running world. I did find some arrowheads in Illinois near the end. I think I was like trying to like clear my head because coaching can be stressful. It's all year round. And so I did look for arrowheads in fields in Illinois because they were still plowing. So yeah, I became a coach in Illinois. I was there for 5 years and we definitely surprised a lot of people. My first year there, we were almost last in the Big Ten.
Okay.
And that doesn't go over well for me. I remember telling the girls, warm down and get in the van. We're getting out of here. Within 2 years, we were sixth in the country. And wow. It was all farm girls. Girls that just had a work ethic, were tough. And so now I start get recruited again. Everyone's like, if she can do that at Illinois, what will she do at a bigger university with more scholarships? So I got asked and asked. Every year, people were trying to get me to leave Illinois. Well, finally, I went to Florida State, which is also an amazing archaeological
state. Yeah.
It's so weird to me. And I stayed at Florida State for 8 years.
Okay.
And we were national runners up twice. I had many NCAA champions. I coached women from all over the world. I had women from Kenya, the Netherlands. It was amazing. But I'll tell you, it is a pretty brutal world at that level.
Mm-hmm.
And I watched a lot of stuff around me that really was disappointing. And it was crushing.
Yes, ma'am.
I never wanted to win that bad. That I would stoop to some of the levels these coaches were stooping to. And I just left. In 2015, I just retired.
Okay.
I was done. Yeah. And my best friend was in Nashville, and I just moved up here. No job, no cell phone, no car, nothing. Just a Penske truck. And I was just done. That's who I am. So now I'm in Nashville. And I'm like recovering from a very stressful life. And my friend, I got a job. To this day, it's been my job for 9 years. It's a 30-hour job a week. I work in a mailroom. And a friend at work, I don't know how we got on the subject, but he said he went to look for arrowheads. And I go, what? And he goes, do you want to come sometime? Oh, my God. He took me. And I could not believe the things I found.
Really?
And I was like, oh, I remember loving this.
Right.
And that was 2017. So that's how it all came. I came back around to where I was amazed by artifacts. I loved looking for them. I started learning about Tennessee's archaeology. So that's, I mean, it's been a circle.
Full circle.
I'm right back to where I began.
Yes, ma'am. That's awesome. I didn't know anything about your running past. So that's really cool to hear that, especially that you were, you know, D1 coach, collegiate like that. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Pretty cool, like you were saying too, how you kind of trekked around to schools that were known for archaeology and known for specific sites. And then to have no involvement in them, and then full circle back all the way to Tennessee and finding artifacts again. So
yeah, and now I like have contacted the what is his name? He's written many books on Cahokia. I contacted him because I was trying to find out about an effigy sculpture.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, if I was a coach back then, I could have just gone into his office, you know? Yeah. Right. But yeah, no, the universe has plans and I'm right where I'm supposed to be.
Absolutely. That's awesome.
So that being said, you know, everybody kind of knows now a little bit about your background. So now you work, you're saying in a mailroom, but you do art on the side. Is that correct?
Yeah. And I'm done with my day job in 7 days. I will be retiring from my day job and I will be doing art as that's it. I'm just going to do art and it will be all, most of my art is Native American, whether it's portraits of chiefs. I love taking artifacts and putting them in hands.
Yeah.
And, or, you know, showing how that pipe would have been smoked. I mean, pretty controversial, but I do love to recreate burials.
Mm-hmm.
Because back when a lot of these burials were dug, there were no laws. It was curiosity or it was science.
Yes, ma'am.
In mm-hmm. most cases. And I just think that is, we already have the information and I can read it, but can I show it?
Yes, ma'am.
In mm-hmm. art? Mm-hmm. That's some of my favorite things to do because it's powerful.
Absolutely. Golly, sorry about that.
you guys still have mosquitoes?
Oh yeah, definitely. It's starting to cool off here a little bit, but yeah, we're not out of summer yet. But like you were saying, what intrigues me most about your work, because there's other artists out there that like Kenny Restner, he illustrates, you know, authentic points.
Mm-hmm.
You know, personal finds of a lot of people, things like that. But what draws me in the most to your work and something that I appreciate because I try to replicate in my line of work is the authenticity to certain points and especially the archaeological significance of some of the things that you do illustrate, like the effigy pipes, some of the gorgets and pendants and things that you've illustrated. And then the way that you kind of almost embody what those pieces were by the surrounding environment when you're illustrating. So the person wearing it or the person smoking it or making the point, the landscape that you're portraying it in. I think it's so interesting how you actually kind of dive into those pieces and extract maybe what it actually looked like then.
Yeah. Like the amount of detail in the work is kind of like nothing's missed.
Yeah.
In the background or it doesn't matter what it is. It seems you didn't skip a beat on anything that you do.
And just like you said with the burials, you know, so those are a little more signified, you know, when they're uncovered as to what was going on or why it was placed that way. But, you know, if you find a point or a gorget or a pendant laying out, everybody, when they pick them up, you know, you wonder who the last person was that held that or what the scenario was that they held that or made that piece. And you signify that through your work. So I kind of want to...
I understand it.
Yes, absolutely.
I understand what it's like to pick that up. So you guys, you understand it's straight up magical.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you guys are like this, but of course you're like seeing all these pieces of flint. You've probably seen 1,000 pieces of flint. You've seen firecrack rock. And here your eyes are just darting around looking for any work mm-hmm. edge or any shape. And then all of a sudden, it's freaking lying there.
Yep.
Just, and you're like, I blinked so many times. I'm like, there's no way. There's no way that's, and I honestly believe it's a gift. These are gifts. When they're perfect and they have no, and you know, it's been washing in and out of a lake or river or creek. How many times? It has to be a gift because it doesn't make sense
mm-hmm.
when you see them like that, you know? And I just, oh, it is magical. Like, I can look at all my artifacts. I don't know if you guys are like this. I can look at all my artifacts and I can tell you exactly where I found every single one. And I've been looking since 2017 in Tennessee.
Yep.
And I don't need to write anything on them. It's literally like burned in my memory.
Yeah.
It was that special.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't have access to enough sites to, you know, find enough pieces to have to document every piece I find or to separate by site frames and stuff like that. Like my A-frame, I've got pieces from all over Texas and I can tell you the story, just like you said, of each point, exactly where I found it. Even like stuff I found with my dad or found with Christian, I can look at their pieces and remember that exact moment that
they
found that.
Yeah. It's fun to go with someone else.
Yeah.
It really is fun.
I enjoy it even on my own, but if I'm not with someone, it's not near as memorable to me. That mm-hmm. sounds bad. If I find a piece, it's memorable either way, but I enjoy it a lot more with people.
Yeah. Well, you've got two chances to find something too. Like, just seeing something that amazing, whoever finds it is still like, there's no describing it. I don't, other than magical.
Yes, ma'am. Mm-hmm.
So yeah, no, I love looking. I don't obviously get to go out as much as I would like, but now that I get 30 hours back a week, you know, I plan on going out a little more. But I'm also a huge crystal collector. Mm-hmm. Like my latest passion, and it's been for almost 2 years now, is going to upstate New York and digging Herkimer diamonds. They can be this big, or they can be literally, they look like little diamonds.
Mm-hmm.
It is extremely hard work. Like, you know, I'm talking rock bars, sledgehammers.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm about 135 pounds, but the rocks I have been able to leverage and break, and it's like a puzzle. You're trying to get to these little cavities within dolomite stone. And in these cavities is where these crystals form. Mm-hmm. So you've got to break rock to find. And when you see it, oh my God. I mean, it'll just be dirt and gray rock. And then all of a sudden just crystals, like just blinding.
Really?
Oh yeah. It's like a drug, man. It's maybe that's what arrowheads are too. A little bit. Well, they are addictive. Crystal hunting is also addictive. But I'm going there the first week in November, and obviously season's going to wind down in New York quickly after that. But
mm-hmm.
yeah, and I go to Arkansas and mine quartz there. I've been to Missouri and done some rock hounding there. I just love rocks pretty much.
Yes, ma'am.
And I do fluorite in Southern Illinois, purple fluorite. It's beautiful.
Really?
So yeah, I just love all rocks.
That's cool. So
yeah,
I'm kind of the same. I like most rocks. I've got some pieces that I've found. I've got a pendant made of quartz that I found here in Bell County. And then I've got a piece of smoky quartz I found down in Barksdale with a dig operator. And it's
really,
mm-hmm, but it, so we find a lot of quartz, but not often do you find it worked. Well, this piece has worked. It's kind of still in its like original prism shape, but there's like six or seven distinct strikes where they tried to thin off of it that you can see.
Wow.
And
wow.
I don't know what quality of gem you could consider it, but it's, you know, you can hold it up to the light and see straight through it. It's a beautiful piece.
I'm sure the natives had the same, you know, thoughts we do. When something is beautiful, I'm sure they picked it up.
Oh yeah.
And definitely. They're like, well, I want to keep this, or I might be able to trade this with somebody.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
For something I need. So I know the Mohawks in New York were trading Herkimers far and wide.
Okay.
That was something that was going on. So, and I mean, we look at some of the major sites, you know, Cahokia, Spiro, Moundville, and I'm getting ready to go to my first show in Indiana, but it's on Indiana and Ohio border.
Okay.
So it's basically an Indiana and Ohio show. It's October 25th, 26th, and it's in Lawrenceburg, Indiana. And this will be my first show in that area. So I've been like geeking out on Hopewell.
Yes, ma'am.
And the Hopewell people, boy, they loved effigies, animals. They got into some funky things. But, you know, they're showing this. It was a mound by Chilliwath, I think it's called. I'm probably saying it wrong. But here's this mound in Ohio, and it's got a Ross blade this big made out of obsidian from Wyoming.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
I mean,
how'd it get there?
Yeah. The ancient people were amazing.
Yes, ma'am.
We know hardly anything, and we are still blown away.
Mm-hmm.
And I always say, imagine what they did with wood.
Mm-hmm.
The things they made out of wood, and the baskets and the mats, and I mean, my brain just goes crazy thinking about the things that have not survived us to pick up and excavate.
Yeah. Yeah, especially, and, you know, you're much closer to most of those mounds. The closest mounds to us that signify anything like that, I think, would be Spiro. It's in Oklahoma, right?
Oh, yeah. I haven't made my way there.
We're going to Oklahoma at the end of October, and I'm really tempted. It's about a three-hour drive from where we're going to be, but I'm tempted to take a day and drive over there to see it. But those mound people, those Mississippian people... The mound culture, it was insane. Some of the things they made, what they made them with, pendants made of shell. I'm sure that they got their hands on a lot of quartz, the effigies they made, stuff like that.
Unbelievable.
Like the jade frogs that you'll see. Have you seen any of those?
Mm-mm.
Really? They're
not for where? For China?
No. These are. Maybe they're not made out of jade. Maybe it's some different type of crystal. At the Mesa Verde site, you know that one in Colorado?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
They've recovered a few of them there. And I'm not like super well versed in the Mississippian cultures, but that was something we're at Mesa Verde I really wanted to see because I think they had two or three of them on display at their little museum.
Wow.
But they were renovating it when we were there, so we didn't get to see them. But they're little.
Oh.
Maybe jade's not the correct thing. They're made out of something.
Well, there's a mineral over there. I cannot get the name. It wouldn't be malachite. There's a bunch of, like, Colorado, California, Utah. I mean, they have incredible amounts of gemstones and different rock minerals there. And I cannot get the... There's a bunch of green ones, you know? Like, could it be aquamarine? Because aquamarine can get kind of green. So it could be whatever, but I wouldn't be surprised. I mean... That and I'm sure they traded with somebody, and thing became part of a ceremony.
Yeah,
I feel like all they were doing was ceremonies.
Okay,
you know, the archaeological record, as far as if we keep talking about Mississippians, there is literally iconography. That there was so much artwork discovered at Spiro, that's been discovered at Moundville, Cahokia.
Yeah.
All these sites, and the iconography is telling stories of the hero twins, and there's how they believe the world was, the above world, the below world. Like, we literally can see their ceremonies and spiritual beliefs in artwork.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, from 1,000 years ago.
Yeah.
I just, that's why I'm obsessed. Like, Hopewell and Mississippian, they're very like into art and producing art and ceremonial pieces. So to me, that's the most interesting. Now, when I go to shows, it's always, do you have anything paleo? That's all anyone wants to talk about. Paleo, you know? And I have a few broken paleo points, and I know it's a big deal and I get it, but I there's not too many things I can. I'm really limited as to knowing much about the paleo people.
Yeah.
Other than the big game and what the arrowhead or the Clovis and, you know, it's much more limited. But when I get into Mississippian and Hopewell, there's so many more artifacts. There's so many more stories going on.
Yeah.
That it makes it easier to paint and draw those things.
Yes, ma'am.
And I know people are like, when are you going to do more paleo stuff? I mean, I just, I'm trying. I'm always trying.
So, and just like you said, and it's something I've noticed. Texas collectors aren't as familiar with much of the Mississippian stuff just because we have Mississippian through the bird cultures, but we don't have it like y'all have it in the right. Mississippi area.
I had to learn that before I came to Temple. Yeah. I had to learn it. Yep.
That being said, I'm right there with you on that. And you can see it in your work. Like you may be illustrating a pipe, but everything that native is wearing in your image is an actual artifact that's been recovered generally at one of those mounds. At least that's, yeah. I'm pretty sure that's how you illustrate it, correct?
That's what I try. I try desperately to do. Yeah. I really do. And occasionally I'll throw like something wooden in there mm-hmm. because all we can do is guess as to what they made out of wood.
Yeah. Right.
You know, like one time I had an elder man with a green slate gorgon on, two holes, and I had it here. And I had him holding a wooden staff with a snake carved into it.
Yeah.
And I'm like, of course they would have had something like that.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
They could have made a million things out of wood.
Yep. Yeah, and
I'm sure they knew what wood does this, what bark was best to be used on houses, how to keep that bark on a housing structure. I mean, can you imagine going back in time? I think these people were straight up brilliant.
I do, too.
Brilliant survivors. Yeah.
And like you were saying too, you can see the culture through the icons that they would illustrate through, you know, their platforms. But then too, what I think is really cool about the mound people is how they would set their mounds. I mean, their mounds are set in orientation to the stories they're portraying. Like I said, I'm not super, super familiar with it. I study up on it now and then, but I do know, is it Cahokia? So Cahokia is a major like city, and then off of Cahokia, there's a couple of nearby mound villages, right?
Hamlets, yeah. I guess you can call them hamlets. I'm not sure if the archaeologists use that term or not, but yeah, like hunting communities. Mm-hmm. Because Cahokia, it was a city, but it was more like a ceremonial center, mm-hmm. And there was a lot of hamlets around. You know, Monk's Mound, everyone knows that, you know. Cahokia, I mean, just imagine what that was like at its height.
Yes, ma'am.
I love all of that. I love early, you know, some of my favorite points are early archaic points.
Yeah.
They are, you know, but the being able to recreate culture and have an idea of culture and what might have been going on, it's hard to do once I get past Adena,
mm-hmm.
because there's just not a lot of engravings on pots or shells. The artifacts just become rocks,
mm-hmm.
you know? Occasionally you'll find more in a cave, of course.
Yes.
But, you know, like with that, with burial piece you have out front there with the large tang knife. When I was researching Texas, I think it's called Texas Beyond Crap History, Texas. Oh, they were wonderful. They were such a big, reference. Texas Beyond. It was like a website that did all the archaeology for Texas.
And okay.
I came across this, Witsite, because I was obsessed with the tang knife. Still yes, am. Still am. Love the Texas tang knife. And I'm reading this report about this woman buried with two huge tang knives that archaeologists say were never used. Those were produced to go with her into the afterlife. This woman had to have been important I haven't read anything about a woman. I know one other place because it's on private property. Another woman being buried with a tang knife or like any, like, I would say the tang knife is a prestigious And so I'm thinking, who is this woman? And then they said they were lying beside her leg. I was like, oh, that's it. I got to draw that. Like now, yeah. You know? And of course, University of Texas at Austin would not help me one bit.
Really?
I called, I emailed, I went through a couple other historical societies. Because it was a burial, crickets.
Really?
Yeah. Hmm. Uh-uh. Hmm. They literally would once in a while send me a message like,
stay away.
Oh, you got to become a member of the University of Texas. And I had to apply for a membership. I applied, didn't get in. Why? Yeah. Because natives have shut down every archaeological report that has a photo of a grave. Mm. Mm-hmm. And I'm almost positive that archaeologists and institutions are being told you cannot talk about burials to anyone as a protective. And I get it. It's just really sad because I wanted to honor this woman.
Yes, ma'am.
Right.
And I still did it without them. I got a couple other people to talk to me. And I said, well, I'm not going to let them stop me. This is an incredible woman. And I wanted to show her son saying goodbye to her.
Yes, ma'am.
Because we all of us know what grief and loss is, mm-hmm. whether it's, you know, 5,000 years ago or today. Like, we all can connect with that drawing.
Yeah,
right. And it's got a cool Tang knife on there.
Yeah. Yeah, that helps. And that's something, too, that does kind of sadden me with the archaeological community is how much they have to hold back or hide from the public, you know, because of Antiquities yeah. Act.
Yeah.
Instead of hiding this stuff, and I think there's a miscommunication between collectors, because there's different people that collect artifacts. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's definitely different groups.
Right.
But
you're totally right.
Legitimate collectors want to, you know, embody what the natives were and what yes. these pieces are. And mm-hmm. To keep that from the public is sad to me.
Yes.
To go and excavate these sites, you know, partially, and then hoard away those pieces and not share that with the community is sad.
It is. It is sad. And I think the problem began a long time ago. If we could have got Native people, the ancestors, to the people, the ancient people, if we could have got the youth involved and excited about archaeology years ago and kept them, giving them scholarships, giving them opportunities. If we could have had this generational excitement of the Native people for their history,
mm-hmm.
this would not be a problem today.
Yeah.
Even with things like Trail of Tears, even with things like residential schools, and I'm a huge advocate for Native people and all the crap that the evil that they have been through. It's evil, and I'm going to say it's genocide in America. It was that bad. And a lot of Americans have no idea. If they think they know Trail of Tears, there was way worse stuff going on than Trail of Tears, mm-hmm. okay, to children, okay? If you could have gotten this generation and kept it going of Native American archaeologists, and they got excited about what their ancestors made, believed, where did they live, how did they live, I'm telling you, that would have made a huge difference.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But now, how careful should I be? Some natives that are connected to the Oklahoma Tribal Office, they are seeing this as a way to take control.
Yep.
And they're taking back their power and they are taking control. You white man institutions, you don't get to have my ancestors' artifacts. We're coming in and we're clearing you out.
Yep.
McClung University, University of Tennessee. Hmm. Okay. Shut down. So I'm telling things we already know. That is shut down, okay? And I understand that anger. And it is, talk about generational, it's called generational trauma, okay? And it's in their blood. They're families on top of families that know what happened to their ancestors and white man and lies, and they're angry and it's in their blood. And so some of this is, obviously this is all my opinion, they're getting back at us.
Yeah.
Okay, because I'm European. My parents are from England. I'm like a horrible, the English came over and were horrible, okay, to Native people. I'm like right there. One of the worst residential schools in Canada was the Mohawk Residential School. That's 15 minutes from where I grew up, okay? This stuff is important to me.
Yes, ma'am.
And I get why they're angry, but there's another side that a lot of people don't talk about and collectors need to understand. One of my great archaeology friends, Dr. Kevin Smith, who teaches at MTSU. I'm very lucky that he even talks to me. The man is brilliant, and his expertise are the Mississippians, mound builders. And I remember him telling me one day, I was painting a gorget, a shell gorget from Castilian Springs. It's one of the most intricate engraved gorgets. It has a hero twin on it. Mm-hmm. And he looks like he's dancing.
Yep.
But really he's supposed to be flying.
Okay.
Okay. It's in the Native American Indian Museum in Washington, D.C. It's a big time piece. And he told me that his friend who was not Choctaw, a Southern tribe. I don't think it was Choctaw. I can't remember now. His native friend said to him, that's not supposed to be above the ground. That piece is not supposed to be in other hands. It carries powers. And he's told Dr. Smith, if I'm remembering this correctly, that some of these artifacts actually are kind of, you don't want to touch them. Hmm. They're too powerful. So there's that side of the story. There's angle control, get back at white man. These are ritual pieces that
we don't understand.
We don't. How can we, right? Mm-hmm. So he's telling us that. And then you hear stories, and the person I've heard this from is very well known in the artifact community, that when the natives are coming back to clear out museums saying, that's a burial item, and they just take them. And the archaeologists are standing there going, that's not a burial item, but it doesn't matter. Cause you're like, that's the tribal office.
Right.
They're taking all these artifacts. They're exquisite and gorgeous, and they are breaking them and burying them under concrete. Mm. So now Native children never get the chance once again to learn about their amazing ancient ancestors and what they made and what they believed. It's gone. Yep. Forever.
Yep.
And I'm just like, this can't.
It
drives you crazy.
Yeah, I've never understood it. I mean, I do understand the hardships they went through, but why would you not want to signify your culture, you know? I don't understand that.
It's very complex, and this can't be the only way.
Yeah.
There has to be some kind of compromise, or I'm not smart enough to know what that is, but it's just, it's getting worse. Like I'm concerned that who wants to be an archaeologist today? There's nothing left to study.
Yeah.
Most museums have locked up anything that has to do with burials. It's locked up. The archaeological reports, which I saw one recently for Ohio, the photographs of the graves, blacked out. All blacked out. Field museum, archaeological, they've been altered. So how are you learning anything if you're a new archaeologist? And what I've heard is people that were going to go into Native American archaeology are actually becoming historic archaeologists because they're like, I'm not doing it. I'm not playing the politics. it's too much.
Yeah.
Archaeology, I'm worried, will die. Native American archaeology, it is not in a good way.
Yes,
it's so sad to me. And I don't know I'm not saying I know an answer. I'm concerned.
Yes, ma'am. Yeah, I can understand that. I don't know that, and again, like I said at the beginning of this, you know, Wren is not from Texas, so I don't know how many burial sites in Texas have been studied. I'm sure it's quite a few, but I doubt it's as significant as what you see with the Mississippian cultures on the Mississippi River with Oklahoma. Where is Cahokia?
Illinois. So, yeah, near St. Louis. It's all kind of...
That's right. I don't think we have as significant influence here like y'all do there. Most of our stuff is more, you know, hands-on flint pieces. A lot of stone artifacts, basically.
Is it your soil that doesn't... I think it's your soil doesn't typically preserve the bones, is what I was... a few collectors told me, and even shell, some of your soil shell, it will just eat away and it won't be there anymore.
Yeah, so where we live is pretty conducive for all, I would think, for all archaeology, because it's black dirt and it seems to preserve bone, shell, everything pretty well. But if you go east of us, northeast, and even southwest, it gets into different soil types. Mm-hmm. And
yeah,
an hour south of us, they're digging in sand camps. Mm-hmm. And
yeah,
the only thing you're finding there is stone. Like, you're not going to find bone. You're not going to find shell.
Yeah.
If you find a piece of shell, it'll be tiny little broke up piece. But here where we live, I mean, the camps that I've been in stacked with, you know, shell midden and stuff. We do get more of those artifacts than other areas will in Texas. But yeah, for the most part, the soil, it pretty much degrades everything minus the stone.
That's what I was understanding. And then you guys would be Caddo, right? Caddo, Apache, I should know all this because I was like looking into it.
Honestly, I'm not super familiar with the Mississippian cultures we had here. Most of the sites that we've been on is more archaic stuff. Mm-hmm. But I do know we had a good bit of Mississippian culture, especially towards the east, and I think that is a lot of Caddo toward the east going into Louisiana.
Yeah.
But we don't have as much of that here in Central Texas. But that being said, we're kind of getting towards the end of this. I know you've got a time frame that you got to stay within. I do want to have you shout out where people can find your work so they can go and view it. We didn't really talk about many of the pieces. You did bring up the Ernest Witt site, Tang Knife Burial. That piece, I think, is awesome. But how did you kind of get introduced into the Texas artifacts here recently? I know that we talked before you had come, and like you said, you were really nervous. Yeah. You were telling me, you're like, I don't want to drive 11 hours and have a flat tire.
I'm a big baby.
I don't blame you. That's a long drive to have something go wrong. We got a lease. We got a deer lease recently, and it's 4 hours away from us. And we blew a radiator hose coming home the other day, and that, you know, that's a 3.5-4 hour setback. No. Luckily, I knew people in that area. Unlike you, you'd be coming 11 hours, and something happened that can be not good.
Yeah, I didn't know anybody.
But
yeah, no, I you know what was cool is while I was getting ready for the Temple show, I had no idea. Like, I knew Tennessee had mastodons.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And I didn't put together that Texas had mammoths.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't even know that. I'm just being honest. Didn't know. And then I was like, well, did they have mastodons too? And no. So it was weird to me because I thought it should be flip-flopped. The mammoths should be in Tennessee where it's more north, but they were down in the south.
Mm-hmm.
And so then I watched a documentary on them finding all those mammoth bones and creating that national monument, and, you know, went down the rabbit hole. And I was like, well, I've got to illustrate Texas grasslands with mammoths. And I have three paleo hunters that walked up on these giant mammoths and they're staring at these tiny little humans like, what is that, you know? Mm-hmm. So that was a really fun piece that I wanted to do for Temple, and I sold quite a few prints, and the original is in Texas, the guy that bought it. And then from that documentary, I heard them say there was saber-tooth tigers in Texas. I was like, what? And I'm like, well, I definitely need to illustrate that because amazing. So I illustrated a paleo hunter. It's like the saber-tooth tiger and him like ran into each other on a trail almost, and they're just staring at each other. Like, can you imagine?
Yeah.
He's going to be lunch for sure. And I also did a short face bear piece for the Temple show, because you guys had all this big extinct game that was found in Texas, and I had no idea.
Yep.
So that was fun, and I had to learn about your different point types. I did a whole bunch of original watercolors and made those into stickers. And it's my Texas projectile point series of stickers. So that was fun too. Buddy, please don't. He picked up his squeak ball.
Oh, he's
so
good.
That'll be fun.
I don't think we can hear it.
Yeah. I know, buddy. He needs attention. He needs a lot of attention. But yeah, no, that was fun. I mean, it was learning different. I was like, oh my gosh, I need to like learn all the different point types so I don't sound like an idiot when I go down there. But yeah, no, it was great. And I hope I can come again this year or next year.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I think I was there right before that tornado came through.
It was actually that happened the week the tornado hit, the week of the show. So they actually mm-hmm. were using the Civic Center where the show was at, as a staging place for Encore to get power back up and stuff prior to the show. So everybody was kind of nervous as if the show was even going to happen still because of that. But
oh yeah, I think I messaged you and asked if you knew, because I was like, dude, I really have prepared hard for this show. I've taken my time off of work, and I'm like, oh no. And then I was like, well, no one can do anything about it. It was devastating to the community. I mean, we all saw it when you help with the cleanup effort?
So, yeah, we work for a local roofing company in Nolanville, which is right down the road. So, yeah, we had crews out the night of the tornado doing cleanup.
Wow.
Yeah, and we're still helping people in the community with roofs and stuff from the storm. Tons of damage.
Have you guys seen the damage in Western North Carolina?
No, ma'am.
From Helene?
Oh, no, not yet.
Just go on YouTube. Western North Carolina, there's 280 roads closed.
Wow.
They did not say how many bridges. There are houses that just are going down the river.
Wow.
I am absolutely terrified as to how many people have died. The flood, no recorded history of this flood. So Helene came up and you saw it hit Atlanta hard. Well, the 2 days before Helene got to Western North Carolina, Western North Carolina had 8 inches.
Mm.
And then Helene came and jumped 15 inches. Okay. This is Blue Ridge Mountains. So that's all up in the mountains. Mm-hmm. Guess what happens?
It comes down.
Flying down the mountains in all these rivers and mudslides. People had no time.
Mm-hmm.
I'm scared to know how many people are dead. I'm scared. And when you see it on YouTube, it looks like the end of the world. Wow. Bad. Asheville, gone.
Really?
I mean, I'm telling you, Asheville is bad.
Wow.
Yeah,
I don't.
So say your prayers, because the people in East Tennessee, Western North Carolina, it is scary. And I know even Canada's sending people downtown.
Wow.
But everyone's trying to help these people. But I am really worried that there's a lot of people that are gone, like probably buried in mud.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Anyways, be praying.
Yes,
because
ma'am.
It's very sad. We need to wake up and realize every day is a gift.
Absolutely.
Because those people, the ones that passed away, had no idea that was their last day.
Yes, ma'am.
We're every one of us is very lucky.
Absolutely.
Because every day can be gone.
Absolutely. People take it for granted every day.
I know. So get out and look for arrowheads.
Definitely.
Find crystals. Do things that make you happy, you know?
Yes, ma'am.
But yeah, if anyone wants to see my art, I don't have a website. I'm really kind of like low key. I'm on Facebook. I do have an Instagram, but I'm not a real Instagram type person. Facebook, you just do a search for REN Harvey and you'll see it's all Native American stuff. I think I might be the only Ren Harvey. I'm not sure. but you don't even have to be my friend. Because it's public.
Okay.
My page is public. If you want to share stuff, you're welcome to share stuff. But I want to tell you one more thing before we get going. I have a huge commission.
Okay.
Okay. Part of the reason I stopped my day job is I was contacted by the state of Mississippi and the Natchez, representing the Natchez people. They're building a brand new Grand Village Museum. And they want me to do 3 paintings for that museum.
Okay.
And work with the Natchez awesome. People. And I'm like, what?
Well, congratulations.
I remember I had to go outside. I was at work when I got that phone call and I like had to go outside. I couldn't believe it happened.
That's awesome.
So yeah, I'm recreating some engravings that were done in the late 1700s. By some French explorers of what the Natchez people looked like,
okay.
What they were wearing. And the Natchez people today, they don't love those engravings because they look like kind of fleshy European people. And so I'm working with them on clothing and colors I want to use and how they want me to represent their ancestors from the 1700s. So, I mean, it's a huge honor.
Yes, ma'am.
Huge honor. But of course, I got a lot of work ahead of me. I've sent them a first set of sketches, and I'm just waiting now for their feedback. But that is a big thing that's going on in my studio whenever I
get moved
to be in my new studio.
Well, congratulations on that.
Thank you.
Well deserved. I mean, the minute I saw your work, I think I seen your work on maybe like Artifact Addictions or something. Because like I said, it was prior to you doing any Texas stuff, and I ordered a print from you, and then we talked about Temple and all that stuff. So, you know, I seeing what you've done, I mean, it's well-deserved. Your art is amazing. Again, I think it's so cool how you take the significance of actual artifacts and portray them. A lot of people don't do that. I mean, there's artists across country, and they just, you know, slap something random on paper or canvas, and you do not do that. Everything you put into your work tends to be authentic, and I think that's amazing.
I'm working hard every day. I want to get better, and I watch a lot of people ask me if I went to school for art, and I watch YouTube. I mean, to be honest, I've got several artists that I really admire, and so I learn each other artist's techniques, and then I make it mine, and I basically... That's how I've gotten better, because I'm learning from other artists and I'm self-taught. But more than anything, like you guys, I have a massive passion for these ancient people.
Yes, ma'am.
I respect, I'm in awe of the artifacts we get to see and the things we get to learn. And I think some of my favorite collectors are people who are there to learn.
Yep.
They love the thrill of finding an artifact, but if they find an older collector that can tell them more, I just feel like the passing of the information and the history in the community, it's a wonderful community of collectors. I love it. I hope it can keep going, because if it wasn't for private collectors, as you're hearing about the museums, we are really lucky we have private collectors right now.
Yeah.
Archaeologists are going to have to start coming to private collectors, whether they like it or not, because soon, I worry,
they won't be here.
It's possible. I mean, it's not going in a good direction.
Yes, ma'am.
But no, I enjoy the artifact community immensely. And some of the stories I hear, and I know you guys are like that when you go to shows and you hear about how someone found this or how I ended up getting this from an estate sale or what, you know, we all love those stories because we all have the same passion.
Yes, ma'am. Well, Ren, I think this has been a great episode. It was great to hear from you, Christian.
Yeah, I mean, we definitely enjoyed hearing everything about you. There were some things that I didn't know. I'm sure Richard could feel the same way about that. And it's just awesome to hear all your stories and the amount of knowledge that you have for everything. It's been really nice to hear. And for me, too, to gain some information about things that I didn't know about personally.
Yeah. Yeah.
Honestly, YouTube is amazing. Like, you could, you know, learn about the Hopewell in Ohio by just searching on YouTube. And let's say you're getting ready to go hunting or you're doing a project around the house, you can be listening from professors and park rangers. They tell you all about this Hopewell site.
Yep.
And it's free. It's on YouTube.
Yep.
So I recommend for people to definitely check out YouTube, and they can have your podcast going, learning from what you're telling them. And it's important to just keep expanding, yes, you know? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Thank you
so much.
We really appreciate you and all the knowledge you brought today. Like I said, a totally different voice in this community for us here in Texas. You know, bringing light to some sites that are really interesting to me. Just like you said, pretty much anything I know about those sites is from YouTube, honestly. And a little bit of reading on some forums and stuff, but to have somebody that knows.
One thing I just thought about that I wanted to plug, I think it's called the Silo site.
Okay.
It's a site in Texas that, once again, no one at the University of Texas wanted to talk to me about. It's a site where there was a boy, and I'm assuming his father, buried in the same pit together. The boy had 4 Tang knives and the dad had 2. And I was like, I'd love to see photos of those Tang knives and learn, was there more in the burial? What else can you tell me about this burial? And I'm wondering if there's someone out there that has that information. It was on a farm.
Okay.
There was some drainage ditch they were building, and that's how they found the burials. But if there's anyone out there that knows about the silo site and this boy and his father, if they could message me, that would be great, because I would like to do that piece for 2025 temple.
Absolutely.
I would love to draw that, but I don't have enough information to do it, or I would have already done it.
Yes, ma'am. What I'll do, I mean, I know a handful of collectors and people locally, and across Texas. I'll reach out to a few people that may have knowledge of it. Do you know what county it was in?
I'll have to message it to you.
Okay.
I can't remember now because I was doing that all back in June.
Yes, ma'am.
Because I really wanted to have it at Temple, but I couldn't even draw a Tang knife because I haven't seen a photo of one. They're probably somewhere. But what a story for a boy and his dad.
Absolutely.
To be buried together. I mean, the tragedy. And these Tang knives were big time burial items that we're seeing.
Yeah.
Just the, you know, with silo site now too, and they're both, and silo's archaic too, of course. But yeah, if you find anything out or anybody knows anything about it, please tell me, and I'd love to create the piece of art.
Absolutely. Hopefully we can get you an answer.
I'd love that.
That'd be great.
Thank you.
We appreciate all you've brought today. We appreciate all you do for the artifact community, and we hope to see you in Temple this year. Hope to see you soon, and you're always welcome here in Texas for sure.
Thank you. Thanks, guys.
Thank you, Ren. We're going to let you go with that.
Thank you. All right. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
In touch. All right.
Yes, ma'am.
Bye.
Bye. So y'all just heard from Ren Harvey. Again, Ren is a archaeological artist out of Nashville, Tennessee. We learned a lot about Ren, a lot more than Christian and I knew prior to going into that, yeah?
Yeah, I mean, she discussed quite a few things that I had no prior knowledge to at all. Some things I did know, some things I didn't. But just to hear it from a different point of view and to hear stories from somebody other than just, you know, our group, our community that we are in, is nice to hear. And then her being out of Tennessee, I didn't know much about Tennessee artifacts or anything along those lines, or even her past being a track star and all that stuff. Yeah. So that was really awesome to hear, you know, kind of going through her life. Just hearing life stories like that is always good for me to really open my eyes to different point of views of different people of the community.
Yeah, and she definitely got into some emotional aspects with archaeology and with collecting artifacts, engaging us in previous Americans, and that's part of collecting, is learning the past of these people.
Mm-hmm.
She does a great job of portraying that in her work, I think. I think it's extremely important work that she does. I think it's extremely cool how she's able to connect to the pieces and portray visually what everyone asks when they find a piece. You know, who was that made that piece? What were they doing? What were they wearing? You know, puts you in the scene with that piece. Maybe not 100% accurate, but as accurate as I've seen.
Yeah.
She's able to bring those pieces to life with more life than they've had in past thousands of years. Those pieces, they lived a life with whoever made them. Whatever that may have been, a broken point that was, you know, thrown from an atlatl or shot from a bow and broke, or whether it be a gorget that somebody wore proudly.
Mm-hmm.
Rin is able to portray that extremely well. Most of her stuff is Mississippian related, Hopewell related, like she said, stuff that maybe not many Texas collectors are as familiar with, more recent natives, but very eclectic type people. They really showed their beliefs through their artwork. They were huge communities. I mean, as we talked in the podcast with her, mound building people, they had giant communities. And even off of those main communities, they had satellite type villages, more village type people than what we see mainly in Texas with the archaic people, you know, being small satellite camps.
Yeah.
But as you do see across Texas, we have small settlements of Mississippian people. That'd be the Bird Point people. Just not like they had on the Mississippi River in these areas that Wren mainly portrays.
Mm-hmm.
But she does also do a lot of archaic stuff. Y'all be sure to give her a look if you haven't looked into her. Again, this year was her first year getting into Texas stuff. Did an exceptional job on it, I think.
Definitely for her first year.
Yeah, she brought in a lot of different aspects of Texas artifacts from paleo all the way up to Mississippian. Her sticker series that she talks about, she's got multiple paleo pieces drawn, and then some bird points, and I think even maybe some archaic stuff in between there.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe a purd or something, I don't remember.
Exactly. Yeah, I think so.
But some really cool stuff for Texas collectors to look into as well is her series that she did, like the Ernest Witt site. I thought it was Ernest White. It's Ernest Witt, I guess.
Yeah.
The Tang knife. We've got another Tang knife back here with a face portrayed in it. That's something I think she does really cool too. She's got one of a purd, similar to this Tang illustration. She talked about the mammoth one, saber-tooth one. I mean, a handful of different legitimate, authentic pieces that are found in Texas that she has recreated. And that's the coolest thing with Wren to me. But that being said, I'm going to let Christian kind of wind us out of here, give y'all a little outro.
Yeah, once again, just like, comment, subscribe if you're watching on YouTube, and then if you're following our TikTok pages, make sure to follow, share everything that we have as far as content related, and also our Facebook page, Native Ways Podcast. I'm trying to get that group up a little bit. I think we're at like 425 right now.
Yeah, fours.
Yeah, somewhere in there. But either way, if you can, just go ahead and share it with your friends, invite them, and let's get this community bigger. That way we can expand knowledge that we have throughout everybody in the community, expand everybody's knowledge, and kind of get outlooks of everybody on the page as well. So, yeah, if you just want to go ahead and do that, you know, make sure you'll keep living your hobbies, and
we'll see y'all later.